This is Aging Forward, a podcast from Mayo Clinic about geriatric medicine and the science of healthy aging. Each episode, we explore new ways to take care of ourselves, our loved ones, and our community so we can all live longer, fuller lives. I'm Dr. Christina Chen, a geriatrician and internist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. This episode, we are talking about the role of exercise in healthy aging. How do we explore optimal physical options for older adults? Our guest is Dr. Edward Laskowski, a professor of physical medicine and rehabilitation at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Welcome, Dr. Laskowski.
Thank you, Dr. Chen. It's my pleasure to be here.
I just have to pause to brag about you a little bit because you are a legend on so many levels. And I hope you know that. I've been listening to your lectures since training and just marveled at your teachings. And it's just really nice to be able to sit with you today to chat about this topic in person on this podcast.
Well, so, you are too kind. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah. So Dr. Laskowski was the director of Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine. He has authored hundreds of publications. He has been awarded numerous awards for his academic achievements. And he's also served on the President's Council for Physical Medicine for two presidents, Bush and Obama.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
As well as he was the physician for the 2002 Winter Olympics. So is there anything you can't do?
No. No, I was blessed to have those opportunities, really. And privileged to take a message forward, which we'll talk about today, a very basic message, but a very important message.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are truly an expert in this domain. And we're excited to talk about how the science of physical activity can really empower all of us to take advantage of something that brings so much health benefits.
Yes.
So, just starting with some basics here, you know, some introduction to the benefits of exercise. We know that there's a lot of literature out there. There's ample evidence to support the benefits of exercise, years and decades of research. Would you mind just summarizing that, if you can, in this time? But also, what are the things that we don't know that's out there about the benefits of exercise?
Sure. Oh, it's a great question. Well, Dr. Chen, as you know, at Mayo, we do some pretty remarkable research and always looking to find things to improve patient care and patient health.
Right.
So what if I told you that there was a pill that reduced the death rate of breast cancer and the recurrence risk of cancer, breast cancer, by 50%, that lowered the risk of colon cancer by 2/3, that reduced the risk of Alzheimer's disease by almost a half, that reduced heart disease and high blood pressure by almost a half, that lowered the risk of stroke by 1/3, that lowered the risk of type 2 diabetes by almost 2/3, and that treated depression as effectively as Prozac or cognitive and behavioral therapy.
I would want that pill. How much does it cost?
Exactly. I'd pay whatever and line up on whatever line I could to get that pill.
Right.
Well, those are all evidence-based and voluminous evidence-based effects of physical activity. You know, very basic, but that it is the magic pill that is free and that does so many wonders for our body, both physically and mentally. And we're finding now in studies now for depression risk, the effect of exercise and improving that for anxiety, for the risk of Alzheimer's. As I said, there's some very nice research here at Mayo by Ron Peterson showing that mild cognitive impairment is reduced in populations who do physical activity on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Parkinson's. You mentioned sports medicine. Well, when I was there, we were the first line treatment for early onset Parkinson's patients was exercise. It's that much evidence based.
Yeah.
And again, voluminous evidence. It's a lot of things in medicine now we're trying orthobiologics, regenerative medicine, very exciting field, but there is voluminous amounts of evidence that physical activity has all these effects.
Why do you think it's so hard to take advantage of that? You know, it seems like almost a common sense thing, and I struggle with this every day. Why is exercise so hard for the majority, but others find it therapeutic and easier to do? Is it all mindset? Is it building that habit into our day-to-day lives? Mm-hmm. Why is it so different for each person?
Well, it's a great question. The physical activity guidelines for Americans are 150 minutes of moderate activity per week or 75 of vigorous. Sometimes, so that's about 30 minutes, 5 days a week of moderate. But sometimes when people, if they're not doing anything and they hear those numbers, they try and do it and they may get that 150, but they're sore and they said, this hurts and I'm done and I'm not doing it anymore. And, you know, the good news is that all activity is cumulative. We even had in our first physical activity guidelines a 10-minute mark that, oh, you really should be doing 10 minutes continuous to get benefit. Now that's out the window as well. It's all beneficial. So movement is medicine. Any kind of movement is good. Mm. And I like to use the term physical activity instead of exercise, because exercise may imply putting on spandex, going into a health club and going somewhere, showering, coming back. And really it's just any activity, anything that burns calories. So taking a walk, wonderful. Swimming, wonderful. Playing tag with your kids, wonderful. All those movement-based activities are effective and they add up over time.
Yeah.
So if we can weave that into our day and not make it as onerous, the old park the car further away, take the stairs, all those seconds and minutes add up. Mm-hmm. Families, very important too, you know, doing things together. And we live in a very busy society with people going everywhere. One strategy, say, yeah, you know, if you're eating dinner and you finish dinner, instead of sitting around the table, you go for a walk around the neighborhood. You bike together, you swim together, you hike together. Mm-hmm. All those things are very helpful. And I know we did that with our kids, and now our kids are, we didn't force them to do anything, but we just did stuff. And so now they do stuff, you know, it's just part of them. And if they don't, they kind of feel bad that they didn't get their activity in. Yeah. So I think getting that to be, like you say, a habit. And seeing the barriers, you know, everybody may have different barriers to exercise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had some people, I'm giving these lectures in large cities. They said, Doc, I'm scared of my kids to go outside and play. And that's a real concern. So finding strategies where that can be mitigated, you know, and indoor opportunities, things like that.
Right.
And maybe there's an education opportunity, because maybe people think they have to run a marathon to be fit and get a health benefit. And you don't. You don't have to. If you want to, that's a goal, sure. Mm-hmm. But again, any movement matters. Yeah. So I think finding out what those barriers are, you can start very slow. I had a patient one time, he was in his mid-50s and he had early onset heart disease. He had high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, very obese, had to use a walker to get around. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, we got to change this. He goes, no, I'm too late, Doc. You can't do this. Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, you can. No, you can't. So we went back and forth. Finally, we got him connected with one of our physical therapists, very nurturing physical therapist. And this guy was walking about 60 to 90 seconds at first with his walker. Mm-hmm. But the next week, he walked about 120 seconds, and the next week, 4 minutes. And he came back about a year and 3/4 later to show me he actually brought his old pants.
Wow.
Because he had lost 250 pounds.
That's amazing.
And he said, Doc, he said, you take a picture of me. He said, because I didn't do anything fancy. He said, I didn't join a fancy health club. I didn't do a fad diet. He said, I just tried to do what she said. I just tried to move and eat better. and again, it's not that easy, but you know, it's an example of, we can really make, this guy changed his life. He's now working in high mountain altitude rescue in Europe.
Good for him. Wow.
So all those,
those things that add up over time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a really great pearl. You mentioned barriers, and a lot of my patients tell me that, you know, age is my barrier, and things, our bodies obviously change with time. I remember the day after my 40th birthday, and I'm not exaggerating, the day after, I got up from bed, and just that sitting up hurt my back. I threw my back sitting up from bed. I'm like, oh my gosh, is this what they're talking about? But, you know, with age, there's a lot of physiologic changes that may impact our exercise capacity and our muscle function. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that science and how that changes?
It's a great point. You know, there are changes that naturally occur in all of us as we get older. Our basal metabolic rate declines, our amount of lean muscle mass decreases. We have increased risk of some things like arthritis, and certainly after age 65, the fall risk increases.
Right.
Again, the good news is that, again, many, many studies show that exercise can mitigate virtually every one of these effects. Mm-hmm. And until we breathe our last breath, it is never too late. There are amazing studies out there. There was one study, they took 86 to 96-year-old individuals, mm-hmm, in a long-term care facility, and they gave them a strength training program. the average strength gain was 174%.
Wow.
Some gained almost 300% in their strength. And that translated into functional difference. People started getting up from chairs they couldn't get up from before. They started being able to cross the street before the light turned red. So it made a difference in their life. That's the good news, is that God has made our bodies so that whenever we do good things, we'll get benefit. Mm-hmm. The strength training, when we lose lean muscle, well, if we strength train, we can maintain that. And then we don't get as much fat accumulation as we do if we did not.
Yeah.
I really encourage my patients, like with that individual we just talked about, and it's never too late, too late to start. And starting slow is not a bad thing. You don't have to do incredibly intense, dramatic things.
Mm-hmm. And you just answered my next question, is can reconditioning reverse or halt this process? And like they say, if you don't use it, you lose it. If you work at it, you can gain it back, right?
And absolutely.
It's encouraging to hear that even for older adults who feel like, you know, there's no turning back, there's always an opportunity to reverse that process.
Absolutely. And just like when we stop smoking, our lungs start to regenerate and get healthy again.
Right.
When we start to do these good things for our body, the aerobic activity, the strength training, the stability training, we start to get healthy in those areas and our muscles respond. They get stronger. Mm-hmm. So, and never too late. Always encourage people that we can always make a difference.
Yeah.
Did you know that women typically spend the last 14 years of their lives navigating health issues? Research says we control about 70 to 90% of our health and longevity. But most women don't take advantage of all the ways to improve life and live longer. Mayo Clinic Press's new book, Ageless Aging, offers a new way for women to age while gaining wisdom, resilience, and experience. Take control of your aging journey today. You can buy Ageless Aging at mcpress.mayoclinic.org and use code AGING for 10% off your order today.
I think one of the biggest challenges is people just don't know sort of where to start. What does an exercise prescription look like for each person? Because it's so different based on their functional abilities and what they're able to start with. In your experience, what does an exercise prescription look like that can be effective and can promote consistency over time?
That's a great question. Well, you know, for heart health and for cardiovascular, it's really, there's no ideal piece of exercise equipment. Mm-hmm. I always tell people it's really nice to do something you like to do. So if you like to walk, that's great. You don't even have to run. You can get all the same benefits from running. So if you like to swim, great. If you like to bike, great. Mm-hmm. If you like to use machines, great. You know, some people get energized and charged up by going to a health club in that type of environment. Some people like to do stuff on their own. So kind of finding where that niche lies in each person. And again, just starting slow, that you don't have to do these, you know, real dramatic, intense workouts, that it all adds up over time. Again, an education area that we can enhance in some people, things like that. Mm-hmm. So
kind of getting creative with what's within their environment, what's feasible, and what they can get started with, even in their own homes.
Exactly. The components we want to add, you want some kind of, again, that heart health. So whether it's walking, biking, whatever, some movement that makes our heart stronger. Strength training is also very important. And again, it doesn't mean professional bodybuilders or, you know, professional weightlifters. It just means, again, mitigating some of those effects that happen with age. We lose lean muscle mass. Let's replace it. And when we start strength training, we do increase our lean muscle mass. That burns more calories. That gives us a more powerful, you know, we say strong muscles protect joints. Muscles unload the joints. So even people with arthritis and all, the strength training is very, very important. Now, if you have a condition like arthritis, there may be some special considerations. So you want to maybe do some low impact aerobic conditioning. So if you have some knee arthritis or some hip arthritis, walking is low impact. So is biking. And so is swimming. Or if you don't like to swim, even walking in the water. If you get in the shallow end, get the water about up chest level, the buoyancy of the water takes the load off your joints, but it gives you resistance to go against. So it gives you a workout. So incorporating some of that strength training as well. flexibility. We term it range of motion about a joint. You really want the optimal range of motion about the joint to get the muscle to function well.
Okay.
And what we're finding, everybody's different. Not everybody can be a ballerina or mm-hmm. a gymnast, but equalness side to side is very important. Mm-hmm. Symmetry.
Okay.
So if we've had, say, a hamstring strain, there might be some tightness on that side as compared to the other side. We want to get that back. We want to get that equal, because over time, that tightness and that imbalance may lead to some overload and some tissue problems. The last thing too is stability training, because it really falls are just a huge issue, a $6 billion problem in our healthcare economy, the sequelae of falls. So you can fall and get a break a hip, you can get a subdural hematoma. So we really want to work on that. And the system we want to work on is the stability system. And we think of the big three as being the cardiovascular, the flexibility, and the strength. I actually add a fourth, the stability system, because it's different. You can be very aerobically fit and not stable. You can be very strong and not stable, mm-hmm. very flexible and not stable. So you have to train stability separately, mm-hmm. but simple stuff will do. So when you're brushing your teeth, stand on one leg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can hold onto the counter initially if that's difficult. But the more we challenge that system of stability, the better we'll get. And studies have shown even Tai Chi, which is a very gentle movement-based therapy, practitioners of Tai Chi have a lower risk of hip fractures and falls than those who don't. So getting that stability in as well.
Yeah. It sounds complex for a patient. You know, I think these four pillars that you mentioned are critical components of not just cardiovascular health, but balance and stability and muscle integrity. And when they hear about all these different areas they have to work on, the first thing is just like, that just sounds way too much. And can someone help me do this? Can someone guide me through this, or a fitness coach? And again, that requires another resource, right? And like you mentioned, all this is so important to falls prevention. How do you approach that sort of mindset of that's just way too much for me to do?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question and a great barrier for many people. But I think weaving things into your life. Mm-hmm. So the movement, again, any movement is good movement. So the simple stuff works. You know, if you're at a desk job a lot, it's good to get up and move, you know, every half an hour, set a timer, even just 2 to 3 minutes. We've got studies that shown that sedentary lifestyle, even if you get those minutes, you're at risk if you sit for 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day at a computer. And in our culture now, that's a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just weaving those things into your day, those movement areas, the strength training, the good news is we don't have to spend a lot of time doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have heard of the principle of sets of exercise, and some people,
right.
Oh, I'll do three, I'll do six sets. You can get very, very good benefit from a single set of exercise performed to muscle fatigue. So that reduces the time it takes to do this considerably. And again, you don't have to do, and in fact, you shouldn't do strength training the same muscle group every day. You should wait at least a day in between. So even a 2-day-a-week strength program is going to reap a tremendous amount of benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that can be simple. You can start out with soup cans, just simple weights that you can do at home, or you can go to a health club if you like that better. But simple things really help. Flexibility, again, stretching in 5 minutes. You can stretch major muscle groups.
Mm.
And we have, for people interested, on mayoclinic.org, if you search the strength training videos, if you just put strength, you'll get 35 videos of how to do strength training with just your body weight, with resistance tubing, with free weights, and with machines. And we really focus on doing it right, because that's with a lot of the things. And technique is so important with strength training. And unfortunately, in my practice, I see people who hurt themselves doing exercise. So we really want people to do it right.
Yeah.
But we have those strength training videos. We also have a stretching slideshow to show you how to do basic stretches.
The resources are out there.
The resources are out there. Mm-hmm. And again, it doesn't have to take that much time. So for those people who are thinking, I can't, you know, really kind of finding ways to weave this into what you do, and realizing again that those minimal minutes we spend with mm-hmm. the strength and stability. And all, again, you're brushing your teeth, you stand on one leg. You're brushing your teeth anyway. So you can combine it just standing on one leg with some stability training.
Yeah. I love these ideas. I feel like the creativity of weaving into your day-to-day is so much better than traveling to a fitness center 3 times a week, and eventually that sort of gets hard to do. But brushing your teeth and standing one leg, maybe doing some squats while you're waiting for the water to boil, or for me, before I go up the stairs, if I'm in the basement working, if I go up the stairs, I have to do 10 stair push-ups. And
good for you.
Before, I couldn't do a single push-up. And about 2 years later, I can do more with good form now. So
that's excellent.
Yeah.
Those are great examples. It doesn't have to take a lot of time.
Absolutely. As far as the big picture of preventive health, you know, how do you counsel people, both young and old, about the overall goal of exercise? It's not just disease prevention, but what are some other overarching preventive health goals of exercise?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And, you know, that 150 minutes was, again, to give the maximal health benefit. Mm-hmm. So the risk of cardiovascular disease, which is still our number one killer, the voluminous evidence to show that that amount of activity will prevent cardiovascular disease and cancer mitigation. About 13 separate cancers are mitigated by physical activity. So virtually all aspects of our life, we talked about the mental health aspect as well.
Yeah.
Physical activity can mitigate the bad things that can happen to us in life. And we have, again, tons of research that document this. The problem now is we have, and you mentioned my two administrations and the President's Council I served on, mm-hmm. our main message was getting the word out there that we have mm-hmm. an epidemic mm-hmm. of obesity and mm-hmm. sedentary lifestyle in the world right now, in the United States, but also in the world. And we've given lectures in Malta and China now. Over 25% of industrialized cities mm-hmm. have obesity problems. Mm-hmm. So it's ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. And in America, about 70% of Americans are overweight, obese, and sedentary lifestyle. And the ramifications of that, when you talk about prevention, when you're obese, you have higher risk of arthritis, you have higher risk of type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm. you have higher risk of cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. There's a myriad of health problems mm-hmm. that we can prevent by working on that aspect. And again, you know, we have a lot of shiny things right now in mm-hmm. regenerative medicine, but, you know, if your BMI is very high, we can squirt something in your knee and maybe that'll help, maybe it mm-hmm. won't. But the real issue is the BMI being high because that puts a tremendous amount of load on your joints. 1 pound in the midsection translates almost to 4 pounds in the lower extremities, the hip and knees. So again, a little can go a long way and it doesn't have to, you don't have to lose tremendous amounts, but even 10% of your body weight can be very beneficial in helping joint health and preventing some of the and mitigating some of the arthritic risk and eliminating type 2 diabetes risk, high blood pressure risk, all these types of things. Mm-hmm. It's really, truly an epidemic. And when we have that amount of people, it's scary too. And there was a great New England Journal of Medicine study. They found that if your BMI was over 30, you had a 200 to 400% greater mortality risk, not morbidity, but mortality. If it was 25 to 29, it was about a 20 to 40% higher mortality risk. Mm-hmm. Those are scary numbers.
They
if we
are.
Had any pathogen that caused those numbers, we'd be, you know, we'd be running in the streets right now. But it's, you know, that and certain ethnic groups and races are affected certainly more. So, so these are huge issues and it doesn't seem we're going in the right direction still, despite all this education and information. As you mentioned, I served under Presidents Bush and then Obama, and the data now is even worse than when I served under those administrations as far as the percent of Americans overweight, obese, and sedentary lifestyle. So we have a lot of things. We have technology. COVID certainly didn't help. Getting back to foundations, we need to get back to these basic things to turn our health around to prevent some of these things that can happen if we don't do that.
Yeah, excellent points. And I think for my older adults in the community setting, my patients who have troubles exercising and staying physically active, one thing that really identifies with them is the notion of being able to stay independent.
Absolutely.
And being functional, because all these things that you're mentioning is leading to a life of debility, which may translate to disability. You know, it just takes one fall to break a major bone and then there goes your walking abilities. And so it's all these things we're trying to prevent in order to keep people as independent as possible in their homes.
You're exactly right. And the frailty index now is being talked about a lot, frailty, right? Well, again, voluminous studies show that if you have that combination of healthy diet, healthy activity, and optimal BMI, that frailty index is going to be the lowest it can be. And you're going to be at the best risk profile for not having frailty. So it's these basic foundational things. Again, there's not a magic pill out there that you take it. Oh, it'll make it better. It's the basics. You know, again, we have a lot of shiny options in our culture, which is great. And we need to do the research and find out how to use these appropriately and find out efficacy of these interventions. But there's nothing that supplants the basics. Mm-hmm. And I tell my athletes that all the time. You know, they're looking for this magic pill. And you look at the greats in any sport, mm-hmm. they did the foundational things, the basics, really well. Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, you know, the greats in baseball, the greats in football. There wasn't anything magic they did. They just did all the right basic things.
I love the tone of this conversation because I feel it's very positive. Because when we talk about topics in aging, it's always like, oh, it's the bad stuff, right? And exactly. how do we prevent this and how do we deal with it when it's happening? But I love this topic because there's so much we can do beforehand that can translate to positive outcomes. And it's just understanding the science and empowering ourselves as well as our patients and families and right. caregivers as well. And so that's the whole goal of this podcast is aging forward. We're trying to help people live their best lives by understanding the basic science behind that.
Yeah. And you know, like it's never too late, you know, and really people may have conditions, again, the arthritis, and we used to think that, you know, what are the conditions that exercise would be contraindicated in? Mm-hmm. There were not that many, but still people even thought, well, maybe inflammatory myopathies. Now we're finding even in inflammatory myopathies that the right amount of exercise is beneficial. Concussion, you know, when concussion first got studied, oh, you go to bed for 2 weeks, don't do anything. Now we're finding that wasn't good. The brain needs blood flow to heal. Mm. So again, done in the right way. So if you have a condition like arthritis and all, it's great to talk to your healthcare professional. And we can probably design an exercise program to mitigate the effects of your condition, whatever it may be. Mm. I deal with physically disabled athletes, and you wouldn't believe that we have on the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic team. In the Paralympic team, we have skiers that ski on one leg, 83 wow. miles an hour. Mm. We have paraplegic individuals who use a sit ski to ski. These are elite athletes. And again, because of their condition, we can design programs for them mm-hmm. to really mitigate the effects of their condition
what
to the point
inspiration.
That they get, yeah, they yeah. get the fitness benefit.
That's amazing. You mentioned your patient earlier who was successfully able to lose over 200 pounds. Do you have any other success stories from your practice?
You know, and it's really the little thing. One of my secretaries actually lost 140 pounds because I saw my slides and I was giving these lectures all the time and she started just doing the basic stuff. And the interesting thing is she's in a cubicle with a bunch of other people and everybody around her now is like, oh, you know, what are you eating today? Or, you know, she goes, oh, can I go for a walk with you? You know, she's a role model that influences uh-huh. those around her.
Yeah.
So, and,
I love
you
that.
Know, many colleagues too, who thought it was too late, you know, and I had a lunchtime talk with one of our administrators and I said, no, it's not, you know, you can mm-hmm. still make a difference in here. And she's like, really? Mm-hmm. Said, yeah. And she, again, it changed her life, got her back into the activity she loved, horseback riding. And so these little things, they really work. They're not it is magic. It's not magic that works the next day. but if you do these things regularly, you're going to reap magical benefits.
Right.
It's very satisfying to see these individuals come back and, you know, how their life has really been changed by it. You know.
On that note, I want to show you something. I want to show you something that I've been hanging on to for a while. So this is a picture of our Northwest Clinic office. Okay.
Yes.
I saw your lecture a while ago. I printed out that slide of that pill one. It's sitting right there.
Oh.
And it's hanging next to a clock that every hour it chimes a random animal sound. And what it encourages us to do is that this is our wellness challenge. It encourages us every hour to get up and we have to do one of these five things, either 10 sit-ups, 10 crunches, 10 push-ups, or running in place for 10 seconds. And so that's been our inspiration for the past couple of years, and it's been inspired by you. So
I wanted to share that
with you, because once this happens, every hour you just see the entire room get up and we're all just doing different things. So
that is so cool.
I just want to let you know you've been touching a lot of people from not just across the world, but within your own institution as well. So
greatly appreciate that.
Yeah.
But it's you putting into action. It's just doing those little steps. And what a creative, unique idea. But there's a sense of community, like you say, where everybody's doing it together at the same time.
It's fun.
That's just wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When we don't hear the animal, we're like, oh, the clock's probably broken.
So now I'm going to use you as an example, Dr. Chen.
Any words of encouragement for people who are struggling to exercise? What are some ways we can empower them?
Again, I think it doesn't have to be all at once.
Right.
It can start slow, and it can include the things that we like to do. You know, we don't need to force people to do something, or again, and they have these visions of when they hear of an athlete, and you know, even in sports medicine, we used to say, you know, everybody, we want to improve your fitness. No matter, you don't have to be a professional athlete to see us. We want to make you better and make you perform better. Mm-hmm. The little steps go a long way.
Right.
So you don't have to do those intense things. I like the term physical activity rather than exercise, because any movement matters. Mm-hmm. Movement is medicine. Motion is lotion.
Yeah, so, I love that.
So, you know, anything will be helpful. And I think, again, weaving them into the day that you will see these benefits happen over time. It's nice to have somebody like an accountability partner, whether it's a family, spouse, friends, whatever, because I think we all have, you know, we get sick, we have busy schedules, and that's okay. You know, sometimes it's, you know, we don't have that legalistic view of, oh, I have to do everything every day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay to miss a day. It's okay to be sick and rest a while. That's okay. And even in our athletes, we find that a period of, you know, even 3 weeks, really, you can maintain your fitness very well. So 3 weeks of maybe not doing the things that they were doing before. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to have little lapses. So the important thing is to get back on it, you know, and maintain those. Again, weave it into your life. So it's to the point you're not even thinking about it. That's where we want to get to the point where if we're not doing it, we say, I don't feel as good because I didn't get my walk today.
Yeah.
I didn't do that.
Yeah.
And that's us. That's our bodies prodding us. Hey, you know, I need this. So
it becomes a natural habit. Afterwards.
Absolutely.
I love that. Yeah. Great pearls. Well, last few minutes, we just want to get to know you, get to know the expert behind all this. Is what do you personally do to stay active? What's your exercise go-to?
So again, a lot of the basics. I love to walk, and I live in a hilly area, so I like to kind of walk up and down hills, and it's a great lower body glute exercise when you do that. And I'm from Chicago. Walter Payton, one of the greatest halfbacks ever in the NFL, his main conditioning was he had a hill behind his home. He used to run up and down that hill, or run up and down that hill, up and down that hill. So I kind of do that. I have free weights that I do at home. Like you, Dr. Chen, we have a very busy schedule. So we have, you know, early morning meetings. We stay late at night. So for me, it doesn't work as well to go to a health club, because then that would take time away from something else. So if I can weave it into home, if I can go home and do my weight training, you know, spend 20 minutes and do my free weights, do my body weight exercises, things like that, that works well for me.
Yeah.
And again, the basic stuff, walking, I like to bike a lot, like to hike, and did some climbing. So just those basic types of things.
Weren't you also a professional skier too, from what
I
recall?
it was many moons ago, but yeah, I was on the US ski team when I was younger. So that I love to ski and do winter stuff too. And that's a good point as well. And I think some of us who live in northern climates, you know, winter can be very demotivating, and we may do great in the summer, and all of a sudden winter comes and bam, oh boy, you know, it really suffers. So I'd encourage those individuals who live in those areas, find something you like to do outside. Mm-hmm. I really think you got to get outside, even in, you know, in some of those days when it's 10 degrees, but the sun is out and the, you know, the snow is glistening and all that. Just again, simple snowshoeing is fantastic exercise. Mm-hmm. And all you need is a good pair of, you know, nice warm boots and snowshoes, very inexpensive. You can rent them at a lot of facilities. But anything that gets you outside, I think, is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I think being in nature and just being, you know, seeing the change of seasons, the different things we see in the winter, the different birds, all that is very soul soothing as well. So I think, you know, just having something you can do year round is important as well. But
yeah, I think the key point here is just, it doesn't really matter what you do, just do something.
Exactly.
Right? Do something.
Exactly.
And just for my own curiosity, what was it like taking care of two presidents? If it's not breaching confidentiality. Yeah. You know, what well, was that like? What do they like to do?
They were great role models. So George W. Bush, he had a little bit of arthritis in the knees. So he switched to mountain biking and biking. And he's very, very, I think he scored in the top 0.5% of his age group in the Cooper Fitness test. So he's a very fit individual. In fact, and after one of these meetings we had, they say, well, there's an opportunity tomorrow. So if you want, okay. So they didn't tell you very much, but one time that opportunity was, we went with a little Secret Service caravan to a Secret Service base in Virginia, and President Bush himself had hand cut a trail, a mountain bike trail. And I rode bike a lot, but I didn't mountain bike that much. So I was just having trouble hanging on. He was amazing. So we're going through the woods of Virginia in this single track thing. I come home, I got like branches hanging off of me. I'm all dirty. What? Where were you? Like, you wouldn't believe it. And he was a great model of that. You may remember his his father skydived at, I think, 85 or 90 years old. He did a skydiving thing, very fit individual as well. So they were great role models as well for that, and really great proponents of activity. President Obama as well. He loved basketball. Mm-hmm. Basketball was his thing. And he made a lot of interventions in his life to improve his health too, and stopped some things that were bad habits. And they were really motivated. Again, this should be apolitical. It's not whatever party you're belonging to. This is just improving health of a nation. And, you know, in the subway of Mayo Clinic, we have the strength of a nation is that quote is the health of its people. You know, I think Charlie and Will had it right. So making efforts as we can, even on a national level, to make an impact in this, I think is going to be very important.
Absolutely. Thank you for that end note there.
My pleasure.
We just appreciate all that you've done, all your work, sharing your story, sharing all the research that you've done to summarize in this podcast that I hope will touch a lot of lives out there and give them a different perspective on how we can, again, empower ourselves. So,
it's been my pleasure, Dr. Chen.
That's all for this episode. Hopefully you're feeling a little bit more informed, inspired, and empowered. If you have a topic suggestion for a future episode, you can leave us a voicemail at 507-538-6272. We might even feature your voice on the show. For more Aging Forward episodes and resources, head to mayoclinic.org/agingforward. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay curious and stay active.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as medical or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider for any medical questions. The appearance of any guest does not imply an endorsement of them, their employer, or any entity they represent. The views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of Mayo Clinic. Reference to any product, service, or entity does not constitute an endorsement of or recommendation by Mayo Clinic.